Tonight, I'd like to explore the nature of compassion a bit more deeply than usual. Over the years, it's become clear to me that there are common misunderstandings about what this state of mind really is. Often, this comes from the words meant to express feelings, which run together, combine, and morph as we examine them. In fact, I spent several hours yesterday totally lost in diction. So if a word that I use this evening has a different meaning for you, please bear with me. And just for purposes of this talk, consider a particular meaning that I'm suggesting. Compassion is one of the four Brahma Viharas, or divine abodes. There are more names for them, but divine abodes comes from a Zen story where the Buddha told some laymen that they could live in heaven if they had these four states of mind: loving kindness, or metta, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. These are states of mind, and that's an important thing to remember. Our minds are not static, but can change their habits if we make a well-directed effort to make that change. And there are practices that have existed for thousands of years for developing each of the divine abodes. The practice that I chose and have pursued has been service, beginning with 5 years of tending the dying, and then as many years working with addicts and people in jails and prisons. There are also meditation practices, repeating phrases and feeling what comes up, or maybe doesn't, that helps to incline the mind toward each of the divine abodes. And you can also practice with each one of the Brahma Viharas in your everyday life by opening your heart to the sentient beings that you encounter, whether they're the clerk at the grocery store, or the neighbor's cat, or the squirrel that's digging in your garden, or whatever. So let me give away at the beginning where this talk is heading. It's all about having an open heart. That's why the practice of generosity, or dana, is so vitally important to the teachers of this Sangha, because it's all about opening the heart, letting the experiences we have in, and letting them pass through. All phenomena arise and pass away. That's the law of anicca, that everything is impermanent. It's a truth that can at first seem harsh. But without change, there could be no life. No wind, just a frozen tableau. Instead, our living experience is vibrant, exhilarating, sometimes crushingly sad, and it's always changing into something else. It's like an ever-turning kaleidoscope. Those four divine abodes are totally interconnected. I gave a Dharma talk about that some years back. So you can look that up on the website if you want more information about that. Each of the Brahma Viharas supports and informs the others. If you examine any one of them to their depths, you'll find the others. Compassion depends on equanimity. And boy, you can certainly feel that when you're in a hospice, because it enables us to look upon whatever happens and bear in mind that it will change and that everyone else experiences the same responses we have. It's not personal. It's as if there's a great lake and we all live on its shores. We all drink from this lake and we share the taste of its waters. Sometimes it's bitter, often sweet. Sometimes it's different in the east than in the south. We can have a different taste than our neighbors today. But eventually we will all experience all the same flavors of life. Equanimity enables us to accept this truth. And compassion lets us be there for whatever any being, including ourselves, may be going through at any time. In the Brahma Vihara Sutta, Buddha said that we all can behold the world around us devoid of covetousness, devoid of ill will, unbewildered, alert, mindful, with an awareness imbued with goodwill, pervading the all-encompassing cosmos with an awareness imbued with goodwill, abundant, expansive, immeasurable, without hostility, without ill will. This way of looking out on the world liberates us from suffering and from any desire to harm other beings. The Sutta calls this awareness release. I love that. It's a release through awareness to be able to look upon this world with kindness, compassion, rejoicing in the joy of others, and with equanimity. It frees us to be there for all beings and be of help in time of trouble. So how do we open the heart and mind in this way? Well, we set the intention. At the door of the hospice ward, I would pause before beginning my shift to let go of whatever I might want for myself during the next 5 hours. I devoted my being there to serving others. That was the top priority. I did what was needed to take care of myself, like wearing gloves when necessary. But my highest purpose was to help others however I could. And so often, helping others meant just being there, being fully present with my awareness of what the patients appeared to be experiencing. To really be there for whatever it was they were going through. On a more mundane, everyday level, I have a friend who, before she turns on the car, says, "May I drive for the benefit of all beings." And I borrow that whenever I realize that I am driving in a state of deep self-absorption. So we just practice letting go of self-will, attachment, whenever we can. The Mahayana tradition emphasizes the idea of bodhicitta, the wish to become enlightened in order to relieve the suffering or dukkha of others. So the goal beyond enlightenment is helping others. This wish is embodied in the ideal of Kuan Yin, who is sitting here to my left, just on the right hand of the Buddha. She is the Bodhisattva of compassion. A Bodhisattva, by the way, is someone who's made a vow to continue the cycle of rebirth in order to keep coming back and helping others until all beings were liberated. Kuan Yin is often depicted, not in this posture, but usually standing, with one hand raised in the teaching mudra, and the other pouring a vial of comfort onto the world. In this pose, she is seated, relaxed, one hand resting on a raised knee, gazing down upon the world. Kuan Yin is said to be she who always hears the cries of the world. She hears, but there is this attitude of openness and acceptance of the fact that we all drink from that same lake of countless flavors. And sometimes they're bitter, and sometimes they're delightful. Kuan Yin represents the pure ideal. So please don't fret or think, "Oh, I can't be like that." But do hold in mind Kuan Yin as a goal for the mind to move toward that ideal. What we actually feel in our daily lives is often any possible hybrid of pure compassion and other emotions, usually involving some form of attachment or dukkha on our part. It is taught that there are enemies of the divine abodes, a near and a far one for each of the Brahma Viharas. The far enemy is usually the obvious opposite. The far enemy of compassion is cruelty. The near enemy is trickier, And I think we can learn a lot from it. It's where most of us live most of the time, in the murky areas surrounding pure compassion. The near enemy is often called pity, which implies an attitude of distance, kind of looking down on the being who's suffering and letting them off a hook or something like that. I've come to think of this near enemy as the result of different infusions of self-interest, or in Buddhist terms, attachment. Sympathy and empathy are usually highly regarded in our society. And in my observations, they often seem to have a faint hint of distance, a sense that I am different from you right now, especially because you're unhappy about X, Y, or Z, and I'm not. We all understand these words a bit differently, so I don't mean to permanently redefine them. For me, sympathy is a feeling of concern and goodwill that we send to others, like a Hallmark card. It's usually very welcome, but it can take a little toll on us to feel it. Empathy is like that, but even more so, because it's when we take on and, in a way, experience what we imagine the other person is feeling. It can be painful and it can wear us down. I think that is what is meant by the term compassion fatigue. But I don't think it's genuine compassion. Kuan Yin sits back, relaxed, as she hears the suffering of the world. There is no sense of a difference between self and other in her heart. So no self-interest, no desire or aversion to taint her concern for the world with any amount of her own dukkha. She observes the experiences of the world, fully aware that we all suffer. Dukkha is universal, except for the fully enlightened. For the rest of us, meanwhile, says the Dalai Lama, compassion without attachment is possible. True compassion is not just an emotional response, but a firm commitment founded on reason. And he continues, genuine compassion is based not on our own projections and expectations, but rather on the needs of the other. So he's saying that we experience compassion as an emotional response that comes from a firm commitment that we make using reason. When I have experienced genuine compassion, even in the presence of someone who's suffering horribly, it has not been painful to me, because equanimity reminded me that this was the same lake of good and bad feelings that we all drink from. Every time I left the hospice after my shift, I felt energized and serene, not drained. It should be noted that compassion is different when it involves those that we've known and loved, rather than these relative strangers in the hospice. I got to know many of them, but they weren't family or long-term friends. Because almost inevitably with the people who've been in our lives, there are all sorts of attachments. Things we've done that we regret, things they've done, things we wish we had said, and on. So much comes to us when we deal with their suffering. These are feelings that are based on our sense of I, me, and mine, that sticky sense of self. And even though in the hospice I saw that almost all friends and families suffered at the bedside, those were usually the people the patient most wanted to be there. So part of what our compassion needs to encompass is our own imperfection in feeling it. Let me just quickly mention some of those things that leak into our compassion. Sadness and grief for what we're losing. And I'm not just talking about deathbed scenarios, but if it's someone close to us who's losing something, the chances are we will feel a loss also. Fear that this might happen to us. Blame, for example. Well, of course he has cancer. He smoked for most of his life. And finally, detachment. Now, that's not what Buddhists talk about when they mention non-attachment, which is liberating. Detachment, very much to the contrary, is like living in an isolation cell. It's not freeing. They're very different things, and they shouldn't be confused, although they really often are. And I've had to try to make that distinction almost every time I talk about compassion and equanimity. So I finished what I had to say tonight. But let me end by repeating. Compassion is not just another emotion. It's a state of mind born of our intention to live with our hearts open to the full range of joy and suffering that we share with all beings, no matter who is experiencing it or why. May this intention blossom in your hearts. Thank you.